Hello, and welcome back to the Healthcare Executive Insights Podcast. My name is Elliot Sloan with the McAllen Group. Today, we are very excited to introduce our guest, Mr. Quinn McCullough, who's the CEO at Scottsdale Detox Center and the Hope House. Quinn, thank you so much for taking time to chat with us today.
Absolutely. Very excited for the conversation.
Likewise. So let's start with an introduction. Tell us a little bit about your professional background, and then we'll learn more about Scottsdale Detox Center and the Hope House.
Yeah, certainly. Taking a little bit of a unique road professionally to sort of get to the medical executive position that I'm in right now. Really in school and growing up, my focus and my passion was in education and coaching. So my background and my father was a coach growing up. A lot of my life I spent, whether in the gym or in the field, and really engaging in just athletics, coaching, mentoring. And a lot of that has really developed myself into what I am today in my position. But out of school with a business and finance degree, I decided that I wanted to be a teacher and a coach. So I spent the first 6 years of my professional career as a high school educator, as a business educator, as a finance educator at a great school in Pennsylvania. And since then, just sort of realized that I was loving what I was doing. I had a passion for it, and I loved the kids that I worked with. But I felt that there was a little bit of a leadership void that I felt. So I moved out to Arizona and found just linked up with a marketing company that was young, upcoming, had a lot of young professionals who were really talented at what they did, and dove in as a project manager, sort of an entry-level project management position, just because I lacked the business experience when I was 28 years old, and said, you know what, I'm gonna show that I'm committed to the company. I'm going to show that I'm resourceful, that I'm driven, and that I'm really competitive. So as I go into this role, that's really going to help me, and I'm going to learn a lot and just soak up as much as I can. Sure. So jumped into that role as a young adult and learned as much as I could. Had a lot of great mentors in that company that I learned a lot about how to develop relationships with individuals, how to communicate effectively with challenging conversations, and with easy conversations, develop relationships. And as part of that company, as that company grew and we became a very successful marketing and e-commerce company, one of the founders had a passion for behavioral health and substance abuse recovery. He had family members that were affected by the disease. And he came into to a meeting and said, hey, I have a passion here, and I'd really like to explore what it would look like for us to create a facility that is not just something that is there and looks nice, but actually dives in to the disease itself and helps somebody in recovery and gives them every tool they need to be successful. So instead of the facade that a lot of the facilities were at the time, something that had that attractive aesthetic, but did really high quality work at the same time.
Sure.
Sitting around, we had this great idea. Hey, we have no idea what we're doing in healthcare, but we're great marketers, so we'll figure it out. Let's hire a clinical director, and we're going to jump in and understand exactly how to found this company. So we dove in blind, admittedly. We've learned a lot in the process, but that really has, going in and not understanding the industry, I think has been a great benefit to myself in my position, and then also to the company, because we were able to see what other facilities were doing wrong without the bad habits, what other facilities were doing well, and just take the best of what we could and really try to learn and implement. And that's sort of, as I progress through the e-com ranks and marketing ranks with the company, diving into this CEO role after that with the medical facility, just made me sort of open my eyes to saying, hey, you're no longer the expert, right? Now you're the apprentice. So you know how to manage people, you know how to market, but you're going to learn a whole new world. So be a leader, but learn exactly how to operate this kind of business. Wow. So that's sort of the path in a quick manner of how the Hope House and Scottsdale Detox came about and sort of my path into grow into the position I am right now.
Wow. It's funny how the world works and where the wind blows you.
It is. Yep. I would have never take me back to a young adult. And you told me that I'd be in this place right now. I would have laughed. We would have had a long conversation and I would have vehemently disagreed with you, but it's a great place. I wouldn't trade it for anything at this point.
But you're still kind of doing what is at your core, which is mentoring, teaching, and guiding those who need guidance.
Absolutely. I think the great leaders, and trust me, I don't put myself in that bucket right now or yet, but the great leaders, they're mentors, they're coaches as a whole. And through, they're the ones that they're not just making decisions, they're explaining decisions. They're providing the rationale. So it's not every time somebody's approaching you with a question, now they're thinking like you are. They're working through that in their head. So I do think that sort of teaching and coaching background has been really instrumental and beneficial. One, to watch amazing coaches growing up. And thankfully I played for a lot of great mentors. So to understand what they did, they just didn't point and say, go do this. They explained the processes, showed you how to think ahead and see why, you know, when you get to point F, it's because of A, B, C, D that was before that. And the whole build up to that play or the whole build up to that decision is why you got there. So that definitely has played a large role in sort of the mentoring aspect.
Well, kudos to your partner and the individual at the agency that took the leap of faith and said, this is something I'm passionate about. I don't know it thoroughly, the business, but I'm going to figure it out because I believe in it and I want to help serve others who need this help. So that's amazing. Love to hear that. And I agree. I think, you know, the best disruptors in industry are the ones who come in having little experience and don't have to have a preset idea of how things should go. Yep. It's a fresh canvas.
Absolutely right. And I think the other aspect of that, I 100% agree. It's a fresh canvas. You learn the things that work well. One for a company and two for an industry. And usually those people are determined. They have a determination about them because they want to learn. They know that they don't know exactly what they're doing. They have a proactiveness. I call it like a resourceful proactiveness that they know that they're not the expert. So they're going to find any resource they can. They're going to pull whatever strings they can, hire consultants, find mentors that can teach them to do it the right way. Instead of just thinking that, hey, I understand this. I've been in this industry for 15 years. There's nothing I haven't seen. Sure. It's show me how to be an effective, or to be a knowledge expert in medication because I'm not familiar with the medication, or in this clinical technique because I'm not familiar with it. And just diving in and being very resourceful and proactive about trying to fully understand and wrap your mind around it, and being inquisitive. To make sure they learn as many aspects as possible and provide the best care that you can or leadership that you can.
Yeah. What do they say? When you're on top, you can get a little bit complacent, right? Absolutely. Where if you're working from the bottom of the totem pole or the ladder climbing up, you're just going to be that much more motivated because you got a long way to go.
Yep. And it's not always about the hustle, but it's about the scratching and clawing to have that competitive desire or to want to be in a different place. And it doesn't always have to be. We often hear that to be a financial or a business motivator, and it doesn't always have to be. It can be an education or knowledge that you just have a desire to understand more. It can be a passion. You have a desire to help more people because of something that's affected you or your family or a friend. So we often hear it just in the business that, hey, this guy is a hustler, or he grinds, or, you know, he works harder than everybody else. But it's not always like that. I mean, in this particular instance, we had great e-commerce businesses. We had very successful marketing businesses. It was a passion that we were affected, not just the main person who brought it in, but all our families in general had some kind of whether it's a cousin, a parent, a child that's affected with this disease. So we all had a passion to help as many people as we could and build what we wanted to be the best, right? It's, if we're going to do something, we're doing it the best that we can. Sure. I grew up in a small town in Pennsylvania, Glen Rock, Pennsylvania, and a lot of farmers around, a lot of farmland, and, learn how to work hard, learn how to be respectful. And if you're going to do something, be the best you can. You're not always going to be the best at it, but if you put your best effort into it and you're the best that you can at it, then you're going to be successful.
And know that failing is a part of the process.
All the time.
If you're not failing, you're not trying hard enough.
That's right. Get back up and do it again. Do it in a different way or do it in the same way, because it's not your fault that you failed and you learned that. So absolutely, you're going to fail a lot.
Well, yeah. I think that as a new business, as a startup or as an entrepreneur, you almost got to be excited about the failures because you know you're that much closer to cracking the nut.
Yep, absolutely. And the failure, it breeds almost a dissatisfaction with mediocrity. When you fail, you know you haven't gotten to where you want to be yet. It could have been a successful failure where you took a step up, but if you're still not at the level that you've aspired to be, it's still a dissatisfaction with being mediocre. I don't want to be in this place. I don't want our facility to be okay. I want our facility to be the best in Arizona. So what do we have to do? This didn't work. What do we have to do to change that to make sure that we're the best?
Sure.
So we talk about that very often, is be dissatisfied with being mediocre.
Sure.
Mediocre is not good enough. Be better than that.
Yep. And you are 100% right. I don't think you can find one household in America that hasn't been impacted with substance abuse. Unfortunately, I've lost friends, cousins to opioids, seen how alcohol could tear families and marriages apart.
And it's getting scarier and scarier every day. The type of substances now that are readily available, when drugs are being cut with very dangerous fentanyl, with very dangerous powder, it's, you never know. Mm-hmm. So you think that you could be safe, and in turn of a hat, it happens to anybody when they're least expecting it.
Yep. Tell us a little bit more about your operation, Scottsdale Detox Center and the Hope House. Tell us what areas you're serving and how big of an operation.
Yep, absolutely. So when we founded the company, we founded it with 20 beds in the residential setting. So there's several levels to substance abuse recovery, and they're really based upon acuity of the client or the patient at that point. Detox, medical detox, is the highest level of acuity. That's very medically focused, where there's 24-hour medical care, registered nurses around the clock, several physicians who come in to visit with the patients, and it's very medically focused, really to help the withdrawal process and allow patients to withdraw in a very safe place that's very closely monitored, always taking vitals, always running a CORCALS, which is a score of sort of a judge of withdrawal symptoms to see what kind of medications are warranted at that time, just to make sure that people don't have dangerous seizures or any other dangerous withdrawal risks at the facility. So the detox level, we have Scottsdale Detox Center of Arizona. It's a 10-bed, very nice detox facility in Scottsdale, Arizona. We have, I believe, to be the only individual private room detox that's available. Most detox centers, you share a room with 2-3 individuals, have a shared bathroom with maybe 7-8 people, and it's a very uncomfortable experience. Sweaty.
Bit of a college dorm experience.
It's exactly right. And it's not a comfortable college dorm experience because you're 2 feet away from somebody who is not handling the withdrawals well. So is agonizing in pain and vomiting all over the bed. So we don't want that. We want someone to be comfortable as they're going through those symptoms. It's already a difficult time.
Sure.
It's already a difficult decision for them to come in because they know that they're going to be uncomfortable for 5 to 7 days. So we try to make it as comfortable as possible. So Scottsdale Detox is 10 individual beds with a medical detox. Our providers are fantastic. very knowledgeable. We have dual boarded providers, which means that they are board certified in both medication, the medical side, and also the psychiatric side with mental health.
Sure.
We have a psychiatric MD. We have an addictionologist MD. So we make sure that we want to bring in the most knowledgeable individuals to make the best decisions. And they're not always the same decisions every time. So you need to have that great support staff that sort of monitors the medical side of things and also monitors the mental health aspect of recovery. So that's the detox. And then the Hope House is two different facilities. Each of them, again, very individualized care. And they each have 10 beds. They're based in 10,000 square foot homes in North Scottsdale. Any amenity that you can think to make you comfortable, again, during a challenging time, we try to offer. So we consider ourselves a very holistic, trauma-informed recovery facility that's at the residential level, where, again, we're medical-focused, making sure that everyone's comfortable, making sure that the mental health is taken care of. But at this level, we're also very clinically focused. The disease of substance abuse is a symptom to something else. That's our theory. Yeah. That there's some kind of trauma that happened in somebody's life. It could be as a child. It could be as an adult, a car accident, an addiction to painkillers, anything like any trauma that happened in their life that they're processing. The substances are masking that. It's a Band-Aid. It's a temporary solution to try to overcome the traumas that we haven't fully processed yet. So we really dive in through several clinical modalities that are evidence-based, have been proven to work. Our clinicians who all have master's degrees, all have licenses with the state, are all certified instead of people that are only in recovery themselves trying to coach through, which is important. We make sure that we have fully licensed, credentialed, educated, evidence-backed theories that are really attacking the trauma and trying to work through and process that to set the foundation and give everybody the tools that they need to take the next step in their recovery journey and really live a productive life.
Sure.
So our operation is 30 beds in total right now. Our staffing is, if I can find somebody who, I don't want to say is better, but if I can find the expert, bring them in as a consultant, bring them in as an employee. I mean, we're really trying to bring the best people in Arizona to one place to collaborate and do anything we can to really save a life or help somebody live a productive life.
Sure. So not only are your facilities beautiful, state-of-the-art, luxurious, but you're putting a dream team together of staff and providers.
That's the goal. Yep. That is absolutely the goal. We're not satisfied with being mediocre. Sure. We want to provide if one aspect of care that we can provide makes the difference, whether that could just be a relationship and one conversation. Sure. So we have a client liaison position, which we sort of created is very unique in the industry, that this individual's sole job, sole purpose is when just to basically observe, walk around all the facilities, visit the facilities, watch. And when there's something that is abnormal that they notice or witness with a patient or with a client, to have a conversation to say, hey, I was there. This person's in recovery. I was there. You know, I noticed something that's, it just didn't seem right. And it could have been an internal feeling that I felt. Let's sit down, let's just chat and have a conversation. And that person in general, a lot of clients say, man, I was pulled outside at 6:30, wasn't even thinking about having this conversation. And we just talked about life, talked about experiences. And this person in that conversation changed my life. Wow. So therapy was incredible, but just that one individual that is observing and looking for anything that just seems inconsistent, and then just being able to talk through it and have a discussion about it. So we try to create little bits and pieces and different jobs that could just find the smallest little piece that could just change somebody's life for the next
30 years. That's amazing. You guys are thinking outside of the box.
Right. Yep.
Tell me what has been effective for you guys to attract the best talent, the best providers, supportive staff? There's staffing shortages in the healthcare space. It's hard to get talent and to keep talent that you do find under your, on your team for their, you know, longevity of their career.
Right.
What has been effective for you guys?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's a difficult answer, I think. Especially in an industry that is sort of just heavy with burnout. I mean, as you're sort of diving through traumas, you're hearing a lot of that as a clinician, or, you know, as an employee, that's your day is constantly hearing traumas. Exactly. Taking that in, processing those, and not just helping somebody process it, but you're processing yourself. So you're working through a lot of that. So the industry in general is very, very, I guess, deep with burnout. It's not common to have people at a facility or even in the industry, I think, probably for longer than 1 or 2 years. Our goal is, we have a couple goals. Our goal is to be always consistent with our mission and our values, which helps a lot. So to attract the best talent, if you're not consistent, if people don't know when they hear the Hope House when they're in Arizona, they hear Scottsdale Detox, if the first thing that registers in their mind is, well, you know, they treated a client one way, then they treated another client differently, and staffing is always a revolving door, then you're not going to be able to attract that kind of talent, and you're going to be stuck in mediocrity. If you're consistent with your values, if you're consistent with how you treat people, if you're pragmatic in how you handle situations that arise, I think those are the keys to making sure, one, that you can attract quality staff, and two, that you develop the reputation that's needed in order to bring those people in. Because the last thing you want when you think, hey, I could go work for Microsoft, or I could go work for, I'm going to struggle to come up with an example, but Microsoft, you're thinking, oh, they've been around for 25 years, 20 years. They've been, a stalwart. We know they're going to be around. They're consistent with what they offer. And that's what people are looking for. I think people that are talented want to know they can be taken care of. They want to be known. They want to know that they're not going to walk in to a tornado,
a dumpster fire.
Exactly. The policies and procedures are set. Now, are there going to be decisions that are unusual that are made every single day, multiple times a day? We never deal with the same thing that over and over, right?
Sure.
Every individual is unique when you're providing the service that we provide. But if you have a consistent approach to that, people are comfortable and they're empowered to make choices and decisions that they know are the right decisions. So that's our approach of how we make sure that we can get top clinicians, that we can have top providers, is they're aware of our name. They're aware that the decisions that we make are to give quality care. The decisions we make are not to get rich. The decisions we make are not to cut costs. We're overstaffed to make sure that we provide that consistent quality care. So when people hear that, people hear us, I think that motivates them to want to be a part of the group.
Yeah. And how would you describe the culture at your organization?
The culture is our goal. I'll give you our goal first and then how I describe it.
Sure.
Ideally, your description exactly matches your goal. It doesn't always work that way. I sort of like the model. I love Patrick Lencioni. A good friend of mine brought me onto him, who writes a lot of sort of management style books. And his theory is hungry, humble, smart, that I really try to, most of my decisions from a staffing perspective, from a company culture, I try to abide by those mottos. Is, we're hungry. We're constantly trying to adapt and learn more and be better. We want our culture to be a culture of learning, a culture of education.
Fluent.
Right. Our therapists, again, aren't content with having 6 letters behind their name. What is the next thing that could help somebody? So right now, we just had a clinical meeting yesterday where we're reviewing our next 2 modalities. They're not even fully finished with the most recent modality. And what can we implement next that might help somebody? So they're hungry. They want to learn more. We want to be able to offer more services. And that bodes into the culture, is that you have a culture of learning and a culture of educating and helping your employees and your clients grow. And then being humble, understanding that we're not the experts and we need more training, being able to work together and seek advice. When our provider who's there says, man, this is a really complex medical situation, and I've been doing this for 20, 22 years and I've dealt with it before, but I'm going to call the psychiatrist too. And let's look the psychiatrist in and make sure that we make that right next decision. And then smart is less of an intellectual component and more of an interpersonal component. So smart in how we're perceiving and handling situations that are occurring. So in our culture, in our company, we want to breed like a commitment of working together and being able to take a step back and pause and view what's happening in front of us and being intellectual about how we're processing that situation and reacting to it. So not a culture of being reactive, but a culture of actually planning out a situation saying, I've been trained on this. You know, this is a little bit weird in how it's presenting right now, but I've been trained in these situations. I know how to react to this, or I know how to approach this. So being smart in that and sort of taking a pause and then going in an educated manner. And I think our culture doesn't always align to that, but we have a culture of people that are committed because of those things. Sure. And that they want to grow and they want to learn. And they know that they have the opportunity to be promoted within. We have, you know, behavioral health technicians that get promoted to case managers and do an amazing job. And then we help them get their therapist education. And then we train them to be a therapist. And it's just that committed culture that sees what we're doing, is committed to it, and sees people getting better and, you know, coming back and saying, oh my gosh, without you guys, I'd be dead. I'd be behind a dumpster. And wow, here I am, and I'm living a productive life, and it's because of you. It's because of this situation. So I think that's our culture. I'd be interested. Now, I want to sort of go incognito and ask a couple people in the organization, and get in touch with you and see how they react. But I would hope that they have a similar, you know, reaction and say, this is, it's a company that really breeds and encourages us to grow. And also that we're collaborative and that, you know, we're trained and we know how to make the decision that's next.
Yeah. And I think that's why people get into healthcare, right? Because it's not just to make a good, comfortable living. It's to be able to serve others and to feel like your ability to serve others can have room to grow, not just be trapped in four walls of this is how you help this patient, just do these things, right? I think that an organization like yours, you are immediately impacting in a huge way the lives of your patients and the clients, and the team can see it in real time, which must be so rewarding. So I guess the good comes with the bad, right? Like the horror stories and the trauma that they have to absorb is rewarded with the life-changing results and outcomes that are being delivered in a short period of time for a lot of these patients.
Yep, you're absolutely right. And I think one of the challenges definitely as even me leading the company and our employees is it's so difficult to track outcomes in this industry.
Sure.
It's oftentimes even successful outcomes that, you know, you'll reach out, you'll do some follow-up, you'll make sure clients have their aftercare planned out, and, you know, the next therapist or the next group, that their recovery group that they're going to be involved in. But it's hard to continue to track those outcomes. Really, the only way to track outcomes is through, if you're billing insurance, through provider shared data.
Sure. And
payers are extremely unwilling and unsupportive to provide you with that data, even if you ask. If you're in contract negotiations, you say, this is the data we have. Our recidivism is 2% into our facility. Industry standard is 14%. Because of that, you know, your standard offer is maybe, we'll say $600 per diem for care. We're asking for $650 because you see lower recidivism coming to our facility. Please share the data that you have with our facility so we can confirm that in contract negotiations, but also so we can hold ourselves accountable.
Yeah.
And whether it's a contract negotiation or just an accountability piece, if there was visibility for our employees, for ourselves, we obviously have metrics that we track to hold ourselves accountable with client outcomes that we track, with client satisfaction when they leave, who we're able to keep in touch with. And I geek out on data. So this is just where this is the hill that I'll always die on. And sure, I always ask the payers, please share your data. I want to know whether I'm the worst, whether I'm the best, or whether I'm in the middle. there's no way other than what I have to see that I can improve or that we can improve as a group unless you show me recidivism data, unless you show me our successes or where our clients went to this provider afterwards when we expect them to go to a different provider. And challenges with healthcare laws, challenges with HIPAA. I understand the complexity of that, but just giving us a couple percentages so we can see, we think we're doing a great job. The payer says, payer A says, you guys are terrible with our clients. All right. Sure. Well, we know that we need to adjust and change, but we're not going to know that unless we analyze that. So as
it's so true too, that your team needs to get that transparency on how well you're doing. And it's not, oh, we opened a new facility and our revenue is up 20%. So be happy. You're doing a good job. That's not what they want to hear.
Nope. That's not it. That's not what they're here for.
Right.
We're here to help people. And there's, I'm sure there's other industries that are in our boat, but coming from marketing in the e-commerce world, it's all your metrics are there. There's no hiding. You can't hide behind anything, you know, in marketing, if your cost of acquisition is through the roof, you're seeing it in real time. And then you make adjustments. If your product is flawed, you're seeing the reviews and they're not ordering from you. So you're seeing it in real time. In healthcare, it's unfortunate. We will discharge a client, set them up with aftercare, follow up, ask people to give us those metrics, and we're met with on deaf ears. And no matter how many times we follow up, we can't see those metrics. We just have our metrics instead of the metrics that other payers that would be beneficial to have. I would fight for it being public. You know, show obviously no names, everything that's HIPAA protected, don't put in there, but show me how the Hope House is stacked helping up people compared to the other 20 providers. And I want to see how I'm doing, whether it motivates me to be better, whether it motivates me to continue to be the best, wherever that lets me line up, show me where we're at. Make it public. Just so we can sort of hold ourselves accountable as an industry and as a facility ourselves to making sure that we're actually providing quality care and we're providing the services that they're paying us to provide to help their clients.
And you think the payers would be incentivized to push the needle forward to get more facilities to have, I forget the name of the term, but I'm assuming it's the term of what's your rate of patients needing to come back to rehab?
Yep. Recidivism. Correct. Yeah. Yep. What rate are staying clean, staying sober, that you set them up for success versus in 5 days, right back into detox, or in 3 months, relapsing right back in.
Yep. And, you know, insurance is paying the bill on a lot of this stuff. So they want to keep people out. So why wouldn't they want to show the industry, hey, this is the new standard. It was here 10 years ago. Now we're here. Catch up or get out of the industry, find a new space to be in. You know, I think that's a big part of not just your specialty in healthcare, but a lot of these specialties in healthcare is lack of patient information being shared. Yeah. I get it. People have their rights. HIPAA is a big, you know, serious law that you need to abide by. But, you know, in my opinion, that is one of our biggest bottlenecks to getting continuum of care is letting provider A share with provider B and share with provider C and provider D, E, and F, even if the patient doesn't know they're sharing it with provider D, E, and F.
Right.
Right. I mean, if it's going to help the industry, do you think patients should care if it's two professionals that are trying to collaborate and provide that continual collaboration on one patient's health?
Exactly. And that's what we preach, a coordination of care, you know, with our clients. I understand that I don't need to know your entire medical history. I don't need to know the things that don't relate to the substance abuse disease that we're really working on right here. But if you provide this to me, or you let our provider speak with the two previous therapists that you saw, and we can coordinate that care, and they can give us some insight into this process. Now the 30 to 35 days that insurance allows us to dive in, which is not a significant enough time, but we do as much as we can in that time.
It's a speed ramp.
Insight gives us the foresight, lets us know exactly, these are what we tried. This is a a clinical technique that we haven't tried yet. And we coordinate that care with outside providers. And then as our acute providing, we can coordinate now with the less acute providers that we're coordinating, that we're setting up for you after discharge. That gives them insight and helps them make the right decisions for you. And that's, again, something that I think as an industry, we're failing. And a lot of it's HIPAA laws, and we're starting to try to work through some of that. There's starting to be some legislation and some laws that are helping the coordination of care and being able to get access to some of that as a provider, but yeah. It's still very far behind. And yeah. If we're really trying to help a client, really trying to help a patient, having access to the information that we need to make sure that we make educated decisions, to make sure that we handle each individual whose brain processes information differently and deals with trauma differently in a way that can really set them up for success. Sure. So coordination of care is huge to get as many providers as possible that are experts on the same page to really help somebody.
Couldn't agree more. And the other thing, which I think is very big part of your business, which I feel is one of the biggest misses in healthcare, maybe up until recently, is the importance on and focus on mental health, right? It used to be taboo. No one wanted to say they had mental health issues. But now we're starting to realize that everyone needs to talk to a mental health professional to be healthy.
Yes.
You know, some people maybe once a year, twice a year, check in, just kind of air out your issues in your head that have been, you know, stuck in your head for way too long, and it's healthy. And it's so easy to implement mental health practices into everyone's life. Just like you go to a doctor and you get blood work every 6 months to check for disease. Why aren't we talking to a mental health professional every 6 months to make sure that we're in a healthy mental state? You know, yep. The payers should be pushing that. The payers should be saying you have to get mental health to stay eligible in our plan at least once a year.
That would be fantastic. It's our benefits package that we offer employees incentivizes them to get annual physicals. If you go get blood work, we give you $100.
Sure.
Here, it's free. It's a free service with our insurance. Go get your annual physical, and we're going to pay you $100 to do that because we want our employees to be healthy.
Preventative.
So, yep, it's preventative. It helps our benefits costs, which are extreme.
Sure.
You know, we're doing preventative medicine, but same thing for mental health.
Yep.
Like, go speak to a psychiatrist, have your annual visit, talk through anything you need to, and then it's preventative, and they can say, hey, maybe, I suggest you either see them or everything looks great. And everybody's mental health is different. I mean, my mental health is one night a month, making sure I spend time with a friend and talking through them who's in a similar life experience that I am, and talking through challenges we have and talking through fun things that we do, or, spending time with my children.
Yep.
Making sure I factor out at least one night a week where I can spend real time with them, as busy as work is and as busy as 24 hours a day, 365 days a year is healthcare. We don't stop. We don't shut down for Christmas, for New Year's, 3 a.m. at midnight. It's gone, and I can get a phone call at any time. So to have that structured time, that's just as much mental health as meeting with a psychiatrist sometimes. So making sure, I love the idea of an annual. I've never even considered it, but just an annual mental health practitioner and have a conversation, and then let's address it at the butt end before it gets out of control for somebody.
Yeah, I would be, I would challenge anyone to try to say there is zero reason for me to ever talk to a mental health specialist, right?
Yep,
doesn't matter how squeaky clean and rainbows and butterfly your life is, you're going to have some dark, shitty days. Excuse my language. that you need to talk to someone about.
Certainly. Yep. Stubborn Quinn 5-6 years ago, before I was in this industry, I would have challenged you on that. But now I 100% agree. There's gotta be something it's not all rainbows. I mean, people deal with emotions and process emotions, and if they tell you it's rainbows, then that's how you know it's not. So yeah. I 100% agree with you. I think that's very important to get taken care of.
This actually might negatively impact your business, but if we were to implement as a society, as you know, a country, from the payers, some type of policy that says we want to make it more accessible and routine for people to get mental health screenings and be able to afford mental health services, and we want to cover those costs and make it just like your 6-month follow-up visit at your primary care provider, your family medicine doctor, and people buy into it and they start doing it.
Yep.
Do you agree that our substance abuse would have a tremendous drop if people could get ahead of their mental health issues?
Yeah, I think it could go two ways. I think it could go two directions. 100% agree. Do I think it's the best thing for our country to implement and do? Is it the best thing for our population? Hands down, 100%. Would it decrease attendance in recovery facilities? It could force the people that are anti-recovery, and you know, I'm not going to dive into this. It could force them actually now to go into treatment, and maybe it would force more people into it, which could be better for society as a whole.
Sure. So I didn't think of it that way. It could actually get people to open up the idea of I do need help.
Absolutely. Yep. Which hopefully would hit it before it spirals out of control and, you know, is in general more expensive. When you're talking about insurance companies, what I'm learning is what I used to think is you have insurance for what if this happens, then they protect me. It's learning now the provider side of thing. Insurance is a business, and it's so unfortunate to think that way. But now insurance in my head is it's not a what if to protect you because I'm helping you. This is a business, and I'm going to try to deny care or say you don't need that kind of care. But I think long term, in their minds, they'd say, well, it might be more expensive because more people would be going in. But that's very short focused.
Sure.
Long term, if we're addressing it at its root when it's happening, then you're not going to have 10 years of this service that you're paying for as an insurance payer. You might have one.
Sure.
So I think that they would view it in a lens that's not appropriate and unfair, when really it would be best for the long-term health and success of everybody to have that.
Sure.
But
yeah, I would
sometimes
hope to
we
see
lose
that.
Those arguments.
Yeah, no, you're right. And it is a sad truth that the insurance companies, they are business folks and they care about keeping their shareholders and investors happy and keeping their stock price high. That's the reality. You know, they're constantly cutting reimbursements and their profits are record setting every year. It's a sad situation. But they're smart in the fact that they should know, you know, there's this movement of value-based care and preventative medicine. And they should know that if they put the money up front to get everyone mental health, they are saving a lot of money downstream, because we know mental health can lead to abuse, substance abuse, which then can lead to exacerbated health conditions, blood pressure, liver failure, overdosing, hospital stays, ER visits, and they're going to be paying the bill on that. Mm-hmm. Right? So they have to be smart enough to know, invest in someone's health up front, make them healthier as quickly as you can and keep them healthier as long as you can. And we'll be still making the margins on the back end.
I couldn't agree more. They need you in their leadership and their data. And it brings me back to data.
Yeah.
Be transparent and public with the data. Show me somebody that gets that medical, that psychiatric attention and mental health attention early. Cost you less. Prove me wrong. There's no way it won't cost the payer less long term than it will if you address that early. But again, if you hold all your data close to your chest, if we could have some kind of legislation or law, or let's use lobbyists in a good regard and have them lobby to say, be transparent with data. Show us all the health data. Show us what you pay for. Show us recidivism rates for mental health. Show us that data for medical too. And for pharmacy, what medications are giving negative side effects and the data behind that, and which ones are showing that they're effective. So all consumers of this service, of any medical service, can make that educated decision.
Sure.
And that makes us as providers even better than we are right now. There is no negative in my mind to that. It forces the poor people to get better or go out of business. And it forces the consumers to make great decisions about their care. And it can't be a win. It's a win-win for everybody.
Sure.
I don't know why that, if we just had access to that information somehow, no names, no HIPAA-protected details, just give us that data that shows these facilities do great, these medications work and are effective.
So and that should be across every specialty in healthcare, right?
Absolutely.
Whether it's an orthopedic for your mom's hip replacement
or
an OBGYN for your wife's delivery.
Exactly right.
Right? Yeah. Like you should be able to pull up the stats like you do look at a football team and look at their stats to try to size them up against another team in the playoffs, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. If my wife has cancer and she's going to see a specialist, I want to see their success rate.
Yeah.
I want to know that specialist has been able to, you know, to help 75% of the time versus this specialist who's 35% of the time. Let's hold providers accountable. Hold me accountable as a medical operator that I'm providing the best care that I can. So that person, so Elliot, when he needs that service, can choose the best provider and can make that other provider not be mediocre, because they can right now. You can be mediocre
in the bar.
Stay in business. Let's make healthcare better.
I love it, Quinn. You're you know, hitting the nail on the head that it's a data transparency issue, and the data's there. You know they have it.
Yes.
Show us your cards.
Exactly. Yep. And it's not even get paid more. I don't care if you keep me at the same rate for 2 or 3 years. I would like to be paid more as a business operator. Yeah. However, I want to improve care. I truly want to improve care. I want people to make great decisions.
Yeah.
And I hear it all the time. And in our industry specifically, I've been to 15 different recovery places.
Yeah.
They were all a vacation. You guys are the only ones that I felt uncomfortable for the first week, because the first week you dug into some trauma that hurt.
And I made me do some work.
Yeah, you made me work on it. Like, you hit things that have never been hit before.
Sure.
But now, 4 weeks later, man, I view it in a different lens. And I just wish that it didn't take 15 facilities to get there.
Sure.
Facility one should do that. And if people could go in an educated manner, then that would happen.
Sure. Yeah. And, you know, this is part of why we created this podcast, to have conversations like this. I think everyone feels the same way, that is a provider or an executive in the healthcare space, that we need more transparency. We need more collaboration. Physicians want to stick together and band together and, you know, not only fight for the cuts that they're seeing in reimbursements, but fight for, you know, the data that you and I are talking about, to make sure their peers, themselves, their teams are being held accountable and delivering the best patient care. At the end of the day, the doctors and their supporting staff are the front lines. It's not the insurance companies treating these patients.
Right. Yep. No doubt. Exactly right. And I mean, you guys, even a marketing organization, that is everywhere. If I tell you that I'm coming in and I know what I'm doing from an SEO perspective, and then I show you the data and your organic search volume is the same as what it was a year ago when I took over, guess what? I'm not a good company, right? I'm getting cut from everybody.
Yeah.
So why wouldn't it be the same thing?
Mm-hmm.
So, yep. We need to do better. We need to do better all the time.
Yeah. And I like what you said earlier, and I'll leave it on this comment. Maybe once in a blue moon, we'll have lobbyists who are lobbying for the little guys.
Yeah, absolutely. They're lobby for transparency, lobby for the little guys. Let's lobby for the important things instead of lobbying for pushing medication that we don't see any data on whether it's successful or not. Let's lobby for
lobby
some
transparency. For good.
Right. Yep. Let's make everything as transparent as possible. Hold us accountable.
Quinn, thank you so much for your time. It's been a real pleasure chatting with you, and I know our audiences will have some great takeaways. And kudos to everything that you and your team are doing to serving all the patients that need your help in the Arizona market. And I know you guys are expanding into new states, so congratulations on that. Perhaps we'll check in on you in a few months later this year to see what's happening. And, you know, we're also trying to bring together like-minded individuals like you. So at some point in time, I'd like to get a meeting of the minds put together to try to maybe put a grassroots push together to get insurance companies to hear some of these cries.
I love it. I love it. And I appreciate what you're doing too, Elliot. This is it's been a fun conversation. There's so many things we can dive into to just to make healthcare a better industry in general. So appreciate what you guys do. This has been fun. And hopefully we'll be talking again soon.
Yeah. Thanks so much. The pleasure has been all ours. And you are certainly right. The healthcare industry has got a lot of patches to fill to get the patients really the care that they need. And it's conversations like this, one day at a time, that'll slowly but surely move the needle in the right direction.
Sure thing.
Thanks, Ben. You have a wonderful day.
Thank you. You as well.
Bye-bye.